Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ira Melbourne reporting. North Korea has a warning as new military exercises are set to begin. North Korea is warning that the United States will be pouring gasoline on fire by conducting its annual war game in the South next week amid heightened tensions between Pyongyang and Washington. The U.S. and South Korea will join forces Monday to take part in the annual 10-day Ulchi Freedom Guardian exercise involving tens of thousands of troops. Combative rhetoric between North Korea and the United States intensified after North Korea tested two intercontinental ballistic missiles last month that appeared to bring much of the U.S. within range. That brought a retort from the U.S. president that Washington could rain fire and fury on the North. About 17,500 U.S. troops will participate in this year's drills. That's a cutback from last year, according to the South Korean military. Police in Spain have linked three rental vans to the main fugitive from an Islamic extremist cell that carried out deadly vehicle attacks in Barcelona at a nearby seaside resort. A police official says Sunday that all three vans were rented using the credit card of Yunus Abu Yaqub, the 22-year-old Moroccan suspected of plowing down pedestrians on Barcelona's Las Ramblas promenade Thursday, killing 13 and injuring 120. He remains at large and is the subject of a massive manhunt in northeastern Spain. An official speaking on condition of anonymity to talk about an ongoing investigation said one of the vans was used in the Barcelona attack. Another was found in Vic, 70 kilometers away. This is VOA News. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis says he's satisfied with how the administration formulated its new Afghanistan war strategy, but he will not discuss what's in it. In remarks to reporters traveling with him to the Middle East, Mattis said he would not talk about the new policy until it's disclosed by President Donald Trump. But he said the deliberations, including talks at the Camp David presidential retreat on Friday, were done properly. He called the process rigorous and inclusive. Months ago, Trump gave Mattis authority to set U.S. troop levels in Afghanistan, but Mattis said he has not yet sent significant additional numbers. He has said he would wait for Trump to set the strategic direction first. Tens of thousands of people took to the streets of Hong Kong Sunday to protest against the jailing of three young democracy activists, with many questioning the independence of the Chinese-ruled city's judiciary. Thursday, Joshua Wong, Nathan Law, and Alex Cho, all in their 20s, were jailed for 6 to 8 months for unlawful assembly. Thousands of people marched in temperatures above 30 degrees Celsius to the Court of Final Appeal, carrying placards and banners denouncing the jailing of the activist. Hong Kong police estimated 23,000 people had shown up at the height of the protest. Tang Yuyan is one of those leading the protest.
We can see that the government is trying to put a very heavy sentencing to fear us in our future struggle on democracy and all other human rights issue in Hong Kong. So we feel really disappointed, and we are gathering here for a protest is that we want to show our determination, and we believe that the government cannot put every one of us in the jail if we continue the struggle.
Protesters brandished a large banner saying it's not a crime to fight against totalitarianism. They shouted, "Release all political prisoners, civil disobedience. We have no fear. We have no regrets." U.S.-backed Iraqi security forces today began a multi-pronged military operation to retake the town of Tal Afar, west of Mosul, from the Islamic State group. Tal Afar is the surrounding area is one of the last pockets of IS-held territory in Iraq after victory was declared in July in Mosul, the country's second-largest city. A town about 150 kilometers east of the Syrian border sits along a major road that was once a key IS supply route. Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi said in a televised speech to the nation broadcast on state television early Sunday, the city of Tal Afar will be liberated and will join all the liberated cities.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
First of all, regret the fact that the head of state has introduced this text in parliament without a large consultation of the population and the different forces in the country.
The Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita cancels plans for a referendum on constitutional reforms.
Ordinary South Africans were definitely outraged by the very unfortunate incident that took place in Sandton. In the same way, Zimbabweans, mostly Zimbabweans this year in South Africa, were also outraged and embarrassed.
And the Zimbabwean First Lady Grace Mugabe returns home from South Africa early Sunday.
Now, the government of Tanzania is supposed to pay this money or the aircraft, which was to come to Tanzania from the Canadian aircraft manufacturer Bombardier, was seized in Montreal until this money is paid.
The Tanzanian main opposition party Chadema demand answers after a plane purchased for the state airliner was seized in Canada. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita cancelled plans for a referendum on constitutional reforms strongly opposed by civil society and opposition parties. The amendment seeks to give extra powers to the president, create new regions, establish a new state chamber, and recognize claims by ethnic Tuaregs in the north of autonomy by officially labeling their desert provinces Azawad. One of the opposition groups which rejected the constitutional amendment is the Democratic Alliance for Peace. The party's leader and parliamentarian Amadou Thiam told me the government was wrong in proposing the constitutional amendment without first resolving the ongoing security challenges in the country.
This party, together with so many other parties and also with civil society, did come together after the vote in parliament of this constitutional revision law. We first of all regret the fact that the head of state has introduced this text in parliament without a large consultation of the population and the different forces in the country. And after that, we have also noticed that in this text, there are reinforcements of the powers of the head of state, which we think are not useful for a democracy, because we think in democracy, we should be going towards reinforcing the powers of the population and reducing the power of the president of the republic. But in this text, we find the opposite. Apart from that, one of our biggest arguments is the fact that we cannot organize a referendum in this current situation in Mali, this situation of insecurity. We are in a country where at least half of the country is not being controlled by the armed forces of the government.
The constitutional reforms part of an agreement of a peace deal with mostly ethnic Tuareg rebels in Mali's north, which will bring about some semblance of peace and improve security in that part of the country?
Yes. This peace treaty, we were of those who supported the peace treaty. But in this peace treaty, there were so many things that should have happened before the referendum. One of those things is that it was the armed forces of the government were supposed to have entered all the places that were formerly occupied by the armed groups. It was supposed to do a mixed patrol. It means security will have been assured by a collaboration with the government forces and the armed groups. But the armed groups, up to now, this collaboration has not been put in place. So we now have, in Kidal, for example, we don't have the national forces present there. We just have armed groups. And in Kidal, the flag of Mali is not hoisted over there. It is the flag of Azawad, which is a separatist movement. So we think all these things should have been taken care of. And also, the administration should have been redeployed in these zones. Also, the return of refugees should have been done. And also, what we call DDR, which is the disarmament, should have been done.
But supporters of the government are saying that with this decision to shelve this constitutional reforms, insecurity would worsen. What do you think is the best step forward, since you have opposed efforts being made by the government to try to restore security in parts of Mali's north?
I'm sorry to say that this peace treaty has been signed for over 2 years now, and it is not being implemented. We have more deaths of civilians in the past 2 years when the peace treaty has been signed than before. So we think there is a serious problem of trust, and there's a serious problem of implementing this peace treaty. We should tackle the true aspect. There have been so many conferences that were supposed to have sorted out this issue. We've spent hundreds of millions of our CFA francs. Nothing is happening. So we think it is even a trap or even a trick that if we go to the referendum, when we have these rebel groups not having no authority in the region, it could be a reason for them to ask for partition. And not only in the north of Mali, but also in the center, we have a group which is being led by Amadou Koufa, which is a jihadist movement.
Amadou Thiam is the leader of the Malian Opposition Democratic Alliance for Peace. He spoke with me from the capital, Bamako. Tanzanian main opposition party Chadema is demanding answers after a plane purchased for the state airliner was seized in Canada. But the government says the opposition is to blame for the seizure of the plane, since the officials say the opposition connived with foreigners to undermine the administration in Dodoma. The aim, the government officials also said, is to sabotage effort of the government to make President John Magufuli unpopular. For reaction, I reach Freeman Mbowe, chairman of the Tanzanian opposition party, Chadema.
The information that we have is the contract was cut short in the year 2009. By that time, our current president was the minister for works, and we are told that he was responsible for the cancellation of that contract. And consequently, this Canadian company, Canadian construction company, went to court asking for damages, and they were awarded damages worth $25 million. This was way back in 2014, and this money was not paid to the Canadian company, and it accrued due to interest to the tune of $38 million. Now, the government of Tanzania is supposed to pay this money, or the aircraft which was to come to Tanzania from the Canadian aircraft manufacturer Bombardier was seized in Montreal until this money is paid.
Has the opposition Chadema demanded explanation from the government about the seized plane, since it was taxpayers' money that was used to purchase it?
Certainly, yes. We had a press conference today in Dar es Salaam after we got the news that our aircraft has been attached in Montreal. And the government of Tanzania and Air Tanzania Company were making this issue a secret, until when we revealed it today that, you know, we have the information that our aircraft has been seized and the government is not coming, it's not giving out any statement. So we demanded the government to come up with a statement explaining exactly why do they have to cause the loss of taxpayers' money in this way. So there are such cases in abundance, and it's going to cost taxpayers money, a lot of money, in a poor country such as Tanzania.
Supporters of the government are saying that this is a minor problem between the government and a Canadian company, and that it will be resolved soon. What do you say to that?
Well, it depends on how they're going to resolve it, because you see, one thing that the government should understand is this is taxpayers' money. It's not the money of the president. It's not the money of the minister. When they make decisions that do not respect the contract that they enter with other, you know, international partners or even local partners, it's unfortunate, because at the end of the day, it's taxpayers' money that has been used to compensate or to pay for such cases. And that is our concern. And of late, we have been complaining that our president does not seem to respect the rule of the law. He does not respect the country's constitution. In some cases, he doesn't respect the existing laws. He doesn't respect the contracts that his previous or his predecessors entered with the other international companies, like in the gold, in the mining industry, in the oil and gas field. You know, we have so many cases whereby our president has demonstrated without any doubt that he doesn't respect the contract and the rule of law. And this is dangerous for our country. It's dangerous for our future.
Supporters of the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi party are saying that this is yet another attempt to
tarnish the country's image abroad and to make President Magufuli unpopular, challenging the opposition Chadema to come up with a solution to resolve this problem, and that the government is working hard to resolve that, and that the government, since the President Magufuli took the helm of affairs, the country has been progressing steadily, which is of a major concern to the opposition because he is doing what a lot of people have yet to do to improve the living conditions of Tanzanians.
It's not true. These are mere propaganda. Since President Magufuli came into power, yes, he came into the power saying that he's fighting corruption, which is good, saying that he's fighting public embezzlement of, you know, of public funds, which is good. He's fighting, you know, all sort of ill things in the country. That is good. But at the end of the day, all his moves does not reflect into the economic prosperity of our country. The cost of living for the last 2 years since President Magufuli came into power has shot up. Companies are being running bankrupt. Most of Tanzanian companies are now running bankrupt. Government is not paying debts. Our external debt is increasing at an alarming rate. We are seeing some dictatorship in this country.
Freeman Mbowe is the chairman of the Tanzanian main opposition party, Chadema. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. The Zimbabwean First Lady Grace Mugabe returned home from South Africa early Sunday after the South African government granted her immunity. The immunity allowed the controversial Zimbabwean First Lady to avoid prosecution for the alleged assault of 20-year-old model Gabrielle Engels. The model accused Grace Mugabe of whipping her with an electric extension cable a week ago as she waited with two friends in a luxury hotel suite to meet one of Mugabe's adult sons at Sandton, Johannesburg. So far, officials of the government in Harare have yet to comment on the incident. For analysis, I read Joy Mabenge of the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, an umbrella group for civil society organizations.
Ordinary South Africans were definitely outraged by the very unfortunate incident that took place in Sandton. In the same way, Zimbabweans, mostly Zimbabweans based here in South Africa, were also outraged and embarrassed. In fact, we are all shocked how South African authorities eventually granted diplomatic immunity to Mrs. Mugabe in the absence of justice being seen to be done, given the fact that this was now a reported and criminal case, which criminal case was now going to be dealt with as a criminal case, and Mrs. Mugabe would have had her day in court to prove her innocence, if she is.
Some people are saying that the incident took some shine off the Southern African Community Summit of Heads of State in South Africa that ended Sunday. Do you share in that assessment?
Oh, yes, definitely, because the opening ceremony, which is open to spouses of the heads of state and government, as well as a few invited delegates, people would have ordinarily expected Mrs. Mugabe to be sitting inside the summit venue, and also, you know, there was just that expectation. So the focus on that was quite high. It was quite visible that her absence is something that attracted attention. But also remember that there were civil society organizations that were protesting outside the venue of the summit in Pretoria, and part of the protest message was against what Mrs. Mugabe had done. Of course, not to say that this would have been the most important thing that people would have protested about or would have protested against. So to have the issue of Grace Mugabe take prominence and center stage was quite unfortunate, because it distracts people from focusing on the real issues that the heads of state and government must have focused on, and civil society organizations and activists must also have kept their eyes on.
Some civil society groups in South Africa are saying that the victim of the alleged attack should press charges internationally, since South Africa gave Grace Mugabe, the First Lady of Zimbabwe, immunity. What have you heard?
I've actually heard about that also, but you must also understand that the victim herself is now working with a civil rights organization, AfriForum, to try and press for justice, but also using any means that are available, including but not limited to the possibilities of private prosecution. But that said, I think where national systems fail citizens, regional and international systems must kick in. So I would support very much a position that says in the absence of justice being delivered by the South African system, the victim must pursue all avenues available, including but not limited to the pursuance of private prosecution, international remedies in terms of seeking justice.
What have you heard since Mrs. Grace Mugabe arrived back home in Zimbabwe?
I think what Zimbabwean authorities have chosen is to remain a bit mum until a clearly crafted statement is put out there. But of course, what is beginning to come out is that Mrs. Mugabe alleges that she actually beat up the young woman in self-defense, which is quite strange because a person of a caliber who is under heavy guard would not have to spring to self-defense, because that is the responsibility of the security men that walk around and drive around with her. Be that as it may, I do hope that civil society, opposition, political activists, social movements, and others would be outspoken about this issue, because it paints the country in bad light. Whether or not she was doing this in self-defense, the fact that there was injury, there was beating up, there was violence from a woman of a stature to a very young, defenseless woman really is bad enough to warrant condemnation from local groups in Zimbabwe, individuals, activists, and everybody concerned. So again, we expect that this is going to take center stage in terms of news analysis and politics in Zimbabwe.
Joy Mabenge is a leading member of the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, an umbrella group for civil society organizations. He's worked with me from Midrand, South Africa. The Kenyan Opposition Coalition has filed a petition at the Supreme Court challenging the re-election of incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
The petition was filed 90 minutes before the deadline and includes more than 25,000 pages in an affidavit. Speaking after filing the petition, the lead lawyer and opposition politician James Oronga described the just concluded election as a sham and said he has evidence to prove it.
This petition has been prepared meticulously, and the major consideration which constitutes the theme of this petition is that this election was a sham. And a sham because the evidence that we presented before this court, that the court is going to consider, is from all over the country. Nearly every indiscretion and malpractice that was carried out in this election has been covered with this petition.
The opposition has refused to concede defeat. Kenyatta, who got 54% of the vote, was officially declared the winner. The opposition alleges the electronic result transmission system was hacked, which created inaccurate voting result. The allegation is denied by the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, which was in charge of the ballot count. In 2013, opposition leader Raila Odinga challenged Kenyatta's win in the Supreme Court and lost. Omari Dunstan is an advocate of the High Court. He says his legal case is different from the previous challenge.
The court of 2013 did not have a chance to listen and hear the evidence that was supposed to be heard. So the court made that decision to the exclusion of that evidence. Therefore, now Raila Odinga delayed to file his case, so all his evidence now are there. The expectation of the Kenyans this time and the type of publicity the matter has taken is totally different. So this matter is a fresh new issue, although the actors are the same.
As part of an effort to make the election free, fair and credible, unlike 2013, laws were adopted to improve the electoral process using technology. The technology was used to identify voters and submit voting results. The court also ruled the result announced at the polling stations were final. In this election, the Electoral Commission was mandated to announce the final result, after verifying all the forms from more than 40,000 polling stations across the country. Electoral law expert Barasa Nyakuri says the judges will look into whether the electoral laws were followed.
The key areas that the judges will be looking at is whether the electoral law and process were followed, then whether there were any substantive irregularities in the process. These irregularities include now like undercasting or overcasting for a particular candidate. If they can also be able to prove that the forms that existed, form 34A and B, were doctored, that can also be another area of concern.
On Monday, August 14th, the electoral agency responded to the opposition request that they were not able to provide all the 34A forms from the polling stations 3 days after announcing Kenyatta was the winner. Failure to produce and upload all the result forms on their website on time has raised questions about the credibility of the process. The hearing of the case begins Thursday. The court is expected to make its ruling on September 1st. Kenya's constitution says if the court upholds Kenyatta as the winner, he will be sworn in within 7 days. If the court rules in favour of the opposition, fresh elections will be held in 60 days. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A short and inexpensive intervention based in cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, was more effective than traditional therapy in helping women struggling with depression or anxiety after experiencing gender-based violence. It's estimated that more than one-third of women around the world have been exposed to such violence. VOA's Ben Thompson reports from Washington.
The intervention, developed by the World Health Organization to help anyone facing adversity, already had been proven effective in helping Pakistanis who were struggling emotionally after being exposed to terrorism. In this latest study, psychologist Richard Bryant at the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia, treated 421 women in Nairobi, Kenya, with either 5 sessions of the new program administered by lay healthcare workers or enhanced usual care administered by nurses. The nurses had received 4 more years of education than the lay workers. That this treatment can be administered by people with little training is important if it is to be used in areas with little mental health infrastructure. Getting to treatment can be expensive and dangerous, and taking time away from work can be costly. So the fact that this intervention is short not only means the program will be cheaper to run, but that it will be easier for patients to complete. Bryant hopes these efforts can be extended to fill a critical gap.
The vast majority of people in the world don't get access to evidence-based care for mental health problems. And so there really is, from a global mental health perspective, an urgent need to have a different way of thinking about how we deliver care. And we can't be relying on specialists. We can't be relying on lengthy sessions of lengthy treatment duration. We can't be relying on systems that require long trainings to upskill people.
One challenge in helping people who have been exposed to gender-based violence is finding them. Rape and abuse still carry a heavy stigma, and it can be dangerous for a woman to speak out. So the program wasn't advertised as being about gender-based violence. Researchers looked for a woman with symptoms of anxiety and depression. But during treatment, they found out that 4 out of 5 participants had experienced at least some form of gender-based violence, most often intimate partner violence, but also rape and sexual assault.
Really, I think what this tells us is that when you go to many of these settings where we know that gender-based violence and other forms of violence are so prevalent, you can actually assist these people, alleviate many of the mental health problems in an effective way without actually creating the problems of identifying them and exacerbating the social stigma.
Since the study was completed in 2015, 1,400 volunteer counselors have been trained in Kenya, and 3,500 women have received the treatment. Following this latest research, published Tuesday in PLOS Medicine, the WHO will begin more broadly distributing the treatment to areas with little mental health infrastructure. Ben Thompson, VOA News, Washington.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to another edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Let's begin with football. The African Nations Champions, CHAN holders, the Democratic Republic of Congo, failed to qualify for the 2018 finals in Kenya following a shock elimination by Congo Brazzaville. DR Congo could only draw 1-1 with their rivals in Kinshasa, having drawn the first leg of their qualifier 0-0. It put Congo Brazzaville through on the away goals rule. Also on Saturday, Zambia knocked out South Africa with a 2-0 win in Indola to progress a 4-2 on aggregate. In other results Saturday, Uganda progressed 3-2 overall despite a 2-0 defeat in Rwanda, and Nigeria overturned a 1-0 first leg deficit against Benin to qualify 2-1 overall thanks to a 2-0 win at home in their second leg. On Friday, Morocco and Libya knocked out Egypt and Algeria respectively as they booked their places at Kenya 2018. Morocco beat Egypt 3-1 in Rabat on Friday to win the tie 4-2 overall. Libya held Algeria to a 1-1 draw in Sfax to go through to the finals with a 3-2 aggregate victory. In Sunday's qualifiers, Namibia host Comoros, looking to come back from a shock 2-1 defeat away from home. Also twice runners-up, Ghana will aim to reach the finals for the fourth time in five attempts by overcoming Burkina Faso in Kumasi. Ghana led twice in the first leg, only for Elias Ouagadougou to snatch a 2-2 draw 5 minutes from time. Despite CHAN matches only featuring locally based footballers, the games have full international status and could count towards the monthly FIFA rankings. In other news, CAF has postponed inspection of the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations host Cameroon. The CAF team was scheduled to begin the 8-day inspection on Sunday, August 20th. CAF says the visit would now take place at a later date. This follows the withdrawal of audit firm PricewaterhouseCoopers, although no reason was given for the withdrawal. Earlier this month, CAF President Ahmed said Cameroon needed to convince CAF of its ability to host the 2019 Nations Cup, which will now feature 24 teams instead of 16 for the first time. And in tennis, Britain's Johanna Konta was beaten 6-4, 7-6, 7-1 by world number 2 Simona Halep to exit the Cincinnati Open in the quarterfinals. Konta, who beat the Romanian in the last 8 of Wimbledon, took an early lead in a first set that featured 5 breaks of serve before Halep triumphed. Meanwhile, Nick Kyrgios beat Spaniard Rafael Nadal 6-2, 7-5 in the last 8. The 31 Nadal will return to world number 1 on Monday for the first time since the July 2014. He will be taking over from the injured Andy Murray, but he had little answer for his Austrian opponent. Kyrgios will play Spain's David Ferrer, who beat Dominic Thiem 6-3, 6-3 in the semifinals. The other last 4 matches will include Grigor Dimitrov and John Isner. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Now back to Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports.
Oh, Mario.
And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Lelo makambo lobi makambo na lembi e. Lelo bitumba lobi kosona e na baye e. Na boyiko baby sanzoto na manzanka na lembi e.
yo kulinga kapesi bazei na mbongo yo kandengi azali ko kabayo na mitema ya basi pe na mibali yo moto zai na ba diplome mitano mario sala quand même effort luka mosala mario pona nini oza ko baby saka usambisa kombo nobo mario ah nalembi
ba protinga na pakolaka zoto ekoma sembe sembe okopete nga na soka lobi na zwa maladi ya kanser lobi ntango na kopola yo kiminga ye mario nabaye mario nalembi ye
bafamii ya mario bakanisaka mario apesaka nga mosoro nzoka nga moto nalatisaka ye naleisaka ye nalalisaka ye mario nalembi ye bima bima na ndako na ngai mario mpo na nini nyongo ya bolingo
ekopetenga na zuwa epai zuwa ya lokuta epai zuwa ya biloko e
bakutakinga na yango
kambo moke mosala koboma
biloko ya ndako e
na somba nalembi ye mario nabaye yo kende mario nalembi yo
mario okutinga na biloko mobali mosusu asomba oyoka elingi ya kovanda te mario oyoka elingi te olia na mesa kaka soki zuwa ekangi yo na poitrine olingaka kobeta ngai nakoboma biloko mario si nasalisa yo mingi diplome nsima ngambo nasalisaki yo mario bongo lelo nga komi mwasi mabe mario likambo te ah mokili e eza kaka boye
mobali akutinga na bomengo asengi akoma ndenga na ndimi mobali akutinga na bangenge asengi atirizenga na ndimi na bandiko bima na ye
babandiko mpenga ye monsieur
mario abimbi moto
akanisi biloko na ngai ya ye
mario nabaye yo kende mario nalembi yo
mario asongi epai ya baboti akuti mbeto na ye ya bomwana ekomi ntango akolala mbeto mokuse makolo milai mario mario na lembi somba mbeto na baye mario na lembi
koyoka motema pasi te ndako nga moko nafutaka bilamba nasombela yo natikeli yo souvenir ya bolingo oyo ezali na lavage nakotindela yo na bato mario nalembi yo kende na yo nabaye yo
mario zuwa lokola fusée mario mario mosala kobetela ngai bana bikoko banango ya yo olingo obeba mama mobokoli
akobetenga na zuwa epai zuwa ya lokuta epai zuwa ya biloko
akutakinga na yango
kambo moke mosala koboma
biloko ya ndako
e na somba nabaye yo mario nalembi yo bima bima nabaye yo
mario nalembongwa likelemba mitutuku misato nasombi mercedes 190 nayebisi mario mokomosi tobima tokende kosala promenade tokomi na nzela mario abi na ngai zonga kote ngai nazali nakumba fratune mpo bamonaka ngambu nasombeli yo yango nayebisi mario te ngai mpena naposo nakumba mpo eloko nasombi sika bato nyonso bamona mpe ngambu nasombi toweli volonga na mario Mario a tout linga voti na nzete
Zoto ezali nano ya meme olingi yo baby sanga elongi Ipare pasi nyonso zwaka mosala ko baby sabango bilongi Kempa nanga ne stope na lembi yo Mario papa na baye yo Kende na yo na lembi yo
Mario a une rabat pour son bien pour sa madame à la pommade. Oh! A tes amouines et à montagne. A l'inga koba la basse à âge naïete. A l'inga au bébé maman mobokoli. Mario. Mario, valise zana ete. Soki mama moboko ya bengani ye. Akanga kobe biloko na liputa e. Babro sada, masini ya mandefu. Kisanola, kut.
Kutinga na bomengo asengi ako mandenga na mimi Na bandiko bimana ye, babandiko benga ye mesyo Mopale a vimi moto, akanisi biloko na ngai ya ye Mopale a kutinga na ngenge asengi ako mandenga na mimi Na bandiko bimana ye, babandiko benga ye mesyo Mwario a vimi moto, akanisi biloko na ngai ya ye Mario na baye yo
ya yo
bima na yo na le mi yo mema bila mana baye yo
Mario a travers yo na pesa bale ki mususu toli boku mi ko linga basi ya patopo na bambongo na bango mobani ya sali mbongo a pesi mwasi yo kei oke ko vande la yepo si di sa yango Yo Mario, okutinda ku apartement kitoko. Biloko yi muta sombite, yo lali obandi telephone television. Oh Mario, kanisa ke mobali wa somba ki onpa muna ki pasi. Likambo nini Mario? Ah. Likambo nalo bangu de zaite. Ezaite, ezaite, ezaite Mario.
Koyo kamote ma pasi tena konga moto na futaka. Il a mana sombela yo, na tikeli yo souvenir ya bolingo. Oye zalina la vache, na kotinde la yo na pato mwika. Mario, na lembi yo, kende mapa na lembi yo. Bima bima na baye yo.
Mario, ba sapato ya Weston, na ba sapato ya Coco, olataka. Kaka mwasi muta sombela kayo. Bilamba ya Valentine, complet ya cuir, na ba chemise ya soie, ba ceinture ya lézard. Kaka mwasi muta sombela kayo Mario. Ba suki ekomi kolala milelu milelu singa singa na moto. Kaka mwasi muta futaka coiffeuse wana. Ah,
ba prodinga na pakolaka, nzoto ekoma sembe sembe. Okopete nga na soka, lobi na zo maladi ya cancer. Lobi tango na kopola yo boyinga ye. Mario
Matela na ye ya bomwana E komi tango akona la matela E toboka e bimisa pasi polo mwe Na baye e Mario Matela mokosa na lemi e Somba matela na baye
Lelo kosona lo bibitumba Na baye o Lelo makambo lo bimakambo Na lemi e Na boyiko bebi sanzoto na manzaka na baye
kuti na ndako mali wa siliki na kanisi bana mosala balambi de biloko malamu te ngamboko na kuti na cuisine na lambeli mali na kina mesa mali wa boibolia a siliki a bengi nga pembe na bi chéri obiki na siliki nga bite na yebite abi ba complet o ya lin bi misiko yo suko sombeli nga te li bale kokufa ya mbalo yo
Mario akutinga na ngenge asengi ya dirije nga na ndimi Na bandiko bimana ye, babandiko benga ye, monsieur Mario avimbi moto, akanisi biloko na ngai ya ye Mario na baye yo, mobali mabe na lembi yo Kopeta kanga na lembi yo, papa
Ah Mario, vraiment kende no kaka Naba grand frère la quartier, okuma ko sela bango suwa, bato amunisika nga na koli Mario. Ah, Mario akomona tamba ko sala versement, ya mbongo ba iko tikela ngai. Mario alongoli senglé, alingi sikwa sala compte ya mbongo. Zue tondi embanga na mitoki, Mario. Me mbongo ngozo konte ayo.
Akomete nga na suwa, e pa izuwa ya lokuta, e pa izuwa ya biloko, akuta kinga na yango. Kambo moke mosala kobo mabiloko ya ndako ena somba Na lembi yo, oh, Mario papa na baye yo oh, Kende na yo na lembi yo, oh, lokoso eleki na lembi yo
Ba familia Mario bakanisaka Mario apesaka nga monsolo Zokanga moto na la kisaka e na le isaka e na la lisaka e Mario antuba na lembi mbalo yo Soko yuki susu na tunia taba muziki na ngaba ya kobonde la yo Kende libela da yo za mwana bato Ngape na mwana bato Mwen
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's One Man's Point of View with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. The people of Kenya relaxed a little bit last week when the National Super Alliance NASA presidential candidate, Mr. Raila Odinga, announced that he and his party would resort to the Supreme Court to seek relief for the election results. Earlier, on the day the elections were announced, Mr. Odinga had said that the NASA Alliance would not use the relief provided in the Supreme Court and instead would seek permission for his supporters to have peaceful demonstration. The fear then was that even though it might be peaceful demonstration, it might encounter some opposition from the opposition, that is, the supporters of President Uhuru Kenyatta, and it might then result in bloodshed. And people were thinking of what happened in 2007-2008. After that, there were a lot of pressure put on Mr. Odinga to reverse his position. And luckily, last week, he did. And to meet the deadline for appeal to the Supreme Court, the NASA Alliance last Friday evening submitted its petition to the Supreme Court requesting the court to consider the elections null and void because it argued that the preparation for the elections and all the other procedures were full of errors and that therefore there should be new elections. Now this would be a problem for the NASA Alliance. Why? Because almost all the observers, national as well as international, gave flying colors to the Electoral Commission for an election which they considered was peaceful and was free of any corruption or problems. Even those who find some difficulties with the transmission of the results felt that by and large, the Electoral Commission had done a very good job. So this is going to be very difficult for them to prove their case. Be that as it may, it is significant that the matter now will be resolved in the Supreme Court and not in the street with some degree of violence. The argument which was made to the Supreme Court did not include an earlier criticism made by the NASA coalition. They had argued that the Electoral Commission's computers were hacked as a basis for the arguing that the elections should be repeated. It should also be recalled that at one stage in the proceedings of the counting, the NASA coalition said that they had information from an inside source that Raila Odinga had won the election because he had more votes than President Uhuru Kenyatta. The result that was announced said that President Kenyatta had received 54.2% of the votes and Raila Odinga had received 44% of the vote. There was something really very unfortunate when the NASA coalition rejected the election. And this refers to most of the observers. Something which was very unusual was that they argued that in the future, the observers should be vetted, not only the countries or associations or organizations, but the leaders. And publicly, Raila Odinga identified the names of some of the leaders of the opposition. I will not repeat the names of those. And that was unfortunate because many people believe this was a very low blow in terms of election monitoring. It is also important to bear in mind that while the NASA Alliance was challenging the presidential results, not much was said about other elections like those for governors, for senators and other representatives. This also underlines the huge importance in Africa for the executive presidents where there is so much power. But what one can say now is this. It is better, and this should be welcome, that this matter now will go before the Supreme Court and it has to resolve it. The timetable is this. The Supreme Court must resolve the issue within 14 days. If it upholds the argument of the opposition, that is Raila Odinga, then there would have to be a runoff elections within 60 days. If, however, the Supreme Court upholds the announcement by the Electoral and Boundary Commission, then an incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta will have to be sworn in for a second time. I thank you.
That was one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Jackson Mvonganyi, and our engineer for today, Tiang Wang, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, better to stumble with your toe than with your tongue. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Famine Early Warning Systems Network, or FuseNet, a U.S. government-funded provider of information and analysis on food insecurity, is signaling that the hunger and nutrition situation in southeastern Ethiopia is deteriorating, with numerous households in the drought-ridden Somali regional state already experiencing severe food insecurity. Likewise in Kenya, although the situation is not as dire, insufficient March to May rainfall has left people living in the country's arid and semi-arid regions at risk of crisis-level food insecurity in the near future. In 2011, the Horn of Africa suffered one of the worst droughts on record. The next few years saw subpar rainfall, which means that the hardest-hit regions did not have the chance to recover, either for growing grain or replenishing pasturage. Then came the 2015-2016 season and the abnormally warm El Niño phase of the global weather pattern. As a result, the most fragile regions in the arid Horn of Africa once again saw the deterioration of agricultural and livestock production, rising food prices, and a future wrought with hunger, malnutrition, and resulting diseases. Today, 7.8 million Ethiopians are suffering acute food insecurity, as are 2.6 million Kenyans. That is why the United States announced in early August that it will deliver more than $169 million worth of humanitarian aid for Ethiopia and Kenya. In doing so, the United States is scaling up emergency food assistance. The funds will provide such necessities as specialized nutrition supplies to treat malnourished children, safe drinking water, and essential health services. In Ethiopia, this assistance will provide food aid for about 3 million people. In addition to aid for Kenyans affected by the drought, the United States is also providing support for refugees in Kenya who have fled drought and conflict in their own countries. It is not a famine, but it is rising up to the levels of getting close to famine, said Matt Nims, acting director of Food for Peace at the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. That is why we want to act now, so that we're not into that stage.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.